Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report, The International Forecaster, right after this. You know, once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider, like John Swinton, for instance. These remarks were made by Swinton, then the preeminent New York journalist, probably one night in 1880. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged all of his journalistic colleagues by replying, "There's no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. Now, if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting to an independent press? We are tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors and the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, and Vanderbilt. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists and philosophers, these preachers and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this Global 2000 with Bible prophecy and the New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. You want to do it right now before you forget. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. The International Forecaster is a newsletter put out by Bob Chapman in Puerto Gorda, Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida. Bob Chapman's been around for a long time. He's a conservative newsletter writer. Been in the business for 35, 40 years at least, maybe 45 or 50. You've never heard of Bob Chapman. You probably didn't hear much about Bill Buckler or Don McIlvaney, Franklin Sanders, James Cook. All of these and hundreds more of newsletter writers are telling it like it is. They'll tell you where the bear does it and where the rubber meets the road, and this is the way the game is played. But you didn't hear that on the 6 o'clock news with Jim Lehrer or Dan Rather. And there's a good reason for that. The powers that be are in control of the press. They're in control of the television networks. In fact, in 1950, there were more than 50 television networks, stations, corporations, and companies that owned the newspapers and news media. Today, there are 6. And those 6 boys control what you hear, what you see, and what you know. What you hear, what you see, and what you know, you believe makes you intelligent, well-informed, knowledgeable, on top of the world. When in reality, you don't know any more than your master has allowed you to know. We call this democracy. We used to laugh at the Russians during the Cold War, you know, in the 50s and 60s. We said, well, those poor dumb clods over there, they get all their news from Izvestia. Why, they've got controlled news. Why, they don't know what's going on in the world. Well, they knew what the leaders of the Soviet Union wanted them to know, and they believed what their leaders wanted them to believe. That's not education, that's indoctrination. Now, on the other side of the coin, though, there have always been underground newsletters and underground press. There was an underground press in the American colonies, and they were out spreading the truth. And there's underground newsletters today, and those boys are out spreading the truth. It's not popular because the truth itself isn't popular. Nobody wants to know the real, hard, down-to-earth, honest-to-God truth. Why, if we actually knew what the hell was going on, it'd scare the pants off of all of us. So we like to listen to some truth, and then we like to fit that in with the fairy tales that we learn on the 6 o'clock news or read in our daily newspapers. Now, the thing that makes Chapman's International Forecaster so unusual, so unique, is in this issue, the February 2005 number one issue, that's volume 9, number 2-1, is that it contains 63 news articles. It's got more information in 8 pages than you're going to get out of your daily newspaper in the same 2 weeks. 63 news stories. 63 stories that you didn't read in your local paper. Didn't hear about. Don't know about. Nobody talks about. They don't talk about it because you're not supposed to know this. So I'm going to share with you what it is that you're not supposed to know. And I'll go through and I'll make a few comments as we progress. Article number one. Here's news story number one. U.S. markets. Now that George W. Bush and the neocons have cut taxes for the wealthy and for corporate interests, their next mission is to destroy Social Security. This is the only safety net that may save some Americans from total poverty and at the same time will further enrich Wall Street. George Bush has declared the program unaffordable in 50 years, and he says only privatization can save it. So as I've said before, every administration in Congress has looted Social Security since its inception in 1935. And the securities that are held in trust in this institution called Social Security are totally and 100% worthless. This has always been a pay-as-you-go system. And this partial privatization of our old age benefits in exchange for giving up some future benefits for a tax rebate and then put into an investment account in order to save for retirement is a sham. Nothing more, nothing less. Markets, as we all know, go down as well as up, but our president fails to mention that in his news conferences. Ask those who were in the markets in the 1930s. Great Britain embarked upon this same mission during the 1980s, and the results have not been good. The result is a call for higher taxes and a call for raising the retirement age, even though benefits are currently minuscule in the United Kingdom. The experiment with substituting private savings accounts for a portion of state benefits has been a failure there. The costs and risks of running private investment accounts outweigh the value of the returns that they're likely to earn. Fees and charges can reduce lump sums by 30% upon retirement. In fact, in 2002, British insurance companies, ever mindful of tough new rules against giving bad advice, began to write to their customers urging them to consider abandoning their private savings and returning to the state pension system, something that millions of Britons had already done. This is the kind of system that George Bush and the neocons of the current administration want us to adopt. It's a guaranteed failure that will make Wall Street more than $1 trillion a year. We call that robbery and fiscal expediency. When Margaret Thatcher rose to power in 1979, she, like George W. Bush, began dismantling much of what the conservatives called the nanny state. Citizens would no longer be shielded from market forces. They would have to stand on their own 2 feet. Britain was to be an entrepreneurial state. Unfortunately, many people did not have the brains or acumen to compete or to manage their funds, and that's true of most Americans today. Now, Margaret Thatcher and Nigel Lawson attacked retirement benefits first, just as George Bush is doing now. The plan implemented slowed the 1.5% to 2% growth in pension increases, which reduced the value of payout by more than 50% over 30 years, and this is what George Bush is proposing to do now. The Thatcher government got away with this because the least generous government system was complemented by the most developed system of voluntary private fund pensions. The United States does not have such systems, and every day they're being cut or terminated by corporate America. And just as an aside, the main reason that the British do not want to switch to the euro and to join the European Union pension scheme is because their private pension system is well-funded and would be merged with the European Union's poorly funded government and personal pension schemes. From 1988 to 1993, $18 billion in rebates were made by the government pension system, and that was invested privately for almost 5 million people. So the bottom line was, the government was spending much more than it was saving by bribing people to leave the system. The government then investigated personal pension clients of most large providers and discovered that a staggering percentage of pensions had been sold to those who would be worse off in retirement as a result of them. Over the next 8 years, about 1.7 million people sought out and received compensation due to fraud that cost the insurance industry more than $24 billion. Now, you can expect the same to happen here in the United States with U.S. insurance and brokerage companies. In addition, hundreds of millions were paid out in fines and penalties. It was the biggest financial scandal ever, and you can expect that to be repeated here, and perhaps even worse. All right, let's take a look at number two. Britain's next crisis is upon them. It is here. The United Kingdom occupational pension system shows that 65,000 British workers have lost all or part of their pensions as a wave of insolvent employers are discovered to have left their pension scheme severely underfunded. Many have been left destitute. This is exactly what is proposed to take place in America. The Pension Benefit Guarantee Trust is in the hole. It's in deficit for a little over $23 billion. And it is headed toward $500 billion in deficit. So as you can see, we are more socialist than England because we supply inadequately funded insurance. Then we have to pay 30% on the dollar, and then we still go bust. The employers are the villains in both the UK and over here in the United States. It is these multinational corporations that stole the money. They should go to jail, and they should go to jail for a long time, but they won't. The result today is, in 2004 alone, 500,000 abandoned private pensions moved back into the state system, just as many are expected to leave this year. Now, the insurance industries have told private pension owners to opt out and rejoin the government system. In addition, of course, the elitist corporations and the Chamber of Commerce want taxes to be raised to cover their theft. So the British blew it, and we should learn from their mistakes. The insurance and the brokerage only want the fees. They could care less if you, as a retiree, go broke or are penniless or not. There's no question that it is cheaper for the government and the people to carry the risk. All that has to happen is that politicians stop looting the $250 billion a year that is paid annually into the Social Security Fund. Social Security taxes should then be put into tradable government securities. If we did that, this would help government fund its debt, but they would have to reduce spending $250 billion a year. They would have to stop looting that $250 a year out of Social Security. Now, there's nothing wrong with the Social Security as it stands today. A law must be passed to stop the looting of these retirement funds. There is no crisis here except in the unbalanced mind of our unbalanced president. Story number three. Later in this issue, we will be giving you the most recent data on foreign fund inflows. Story number three deals with the trade deficit. The current account deficit of $60 billion in November was disastrous. The dollar fell, and rightly so, but the Federal Reserve came in to the rescue. The Federal Reserve stopped the fall of the dollar and sent it right back up again, back to foreign fund inflows. In October, foreigners bought a net $48 billion worth of stocks and bonds here in the United States. Now, that's the smallest monthly inflow since October of 2003, and it's well below the $68 billion monthly average since then. Now, for the 12 months ended in October 2004, the net inflow was $854 billion, which fortunately is $254 billion above our $600 billion current account deficit. In addition, their figures are estimates. There is not a $854 billion inflow because the Treasury advises that these published numbers should be adjusted for stock swaps in mergers between American and foreign companies and for principal payments made on asset-backed derivative securities. When those adjustments are made, October slips 7.2% to $44.6 billion, and the net inflow over the 12-month period through October 2004 drops by 6.6% to $797 billion, not $854 billion. So, when the new foreign inflow figures hit this week, they will be very important. Story number four deals with stocks. Shortly, we will see a market remake of 1977. And we believe we will see a market correction by the end of 2005 by at least 20%, which would be about 8,500 on the Dow. Now, that's based on the fundamentals. If we have some unusual jarring events, like a war or something on that scale, we could easily see 7,286 again. And if we're right and we see 7,286 to 8,500 in 2005, then in 2006 we should see a Dow of 6,000, And in 2007, we should see the Dow down to about 4,000 to 4,500. In 2005, growth should be in the neighborhood of 2.5% to 3%. Oil prices averaging $45 a barrel, inflation figures at 5%, which is up from 3.6%, and our figure will be at about 11% inflation for the year 2005, adjusted for the truth as opposed to the government statistics. Number five, economic growth. Unemployment will reach an official 6.5%, but the real figure is going to be around 14 to 15%. Commodity prices are moving higher in the first half of this year, and they should flatten out over the second half. The dollar presently is in a bear market rally, assisted by the central banks of Europe. 80 on the dollar index will be tested. And if 80 could be broken to the downside, once the dollar rally is over, gold will rise to over $500 an ounce in 2005, and perhaps as high as $850, which is about where it was in 1980. Silver could move to $10, perhaps even $15 an ounce, and it wouldn't be unreasonable to see silver go to $20 an ounce during 2005. And that's because a dollar between 80 and 87 is of very little help to the balance of payments deficit. So don't expect any improvement in personal savings with inflation. There are lagging wages and mountains of debt that have to be liquidated. By the middle of the year, we should see an inverted yield curve in bonds, and that's when short-term rates are higher than the long-term rates. That's not going to last very long in spite of intervention by the Federal Reserve and the plunge protection team. Long rates have to rise to attract $2.4 billion a day from foreigners. That's what we're borrowing, $2.4 billion a day from foreigners investing in the United States. By June, and at least by year's end, the U.S. 10-year Treasury note will be yielding 6%, and the 30-year mortgage will be over 7%. So what that means out here on Main Street is house prices will be headed down 5 to 15%, dependent, of course, upon the location and the degree of previous appreciation. The Federal Reserve increased the M3 money supply by 7.1% last year. And as a result, bank loans were up 8.9%, or more than $1 trillion. Now, you can expect bank loans to rise over 10% and M3 12% to 15% this year. The floodgates will be opened again. This will nullify the 1.75% plus rise in interest rates and push up inflation and eventually force the dollar below 80 on the dollar index. The industrial base of America, which is now at 13% of non-farm employment and down from 25% just 20 years ago, will continue to shrink. Workers will move into lower paying jobs as they have been, and those falling wages will drastically cut consumption. The very core and heart of America is now being ripped out of our country by this insane free trade policy, and by globalization, and by the outsourcing of more than 3 million jobs over the past 4 or 5 years. This loss of manufacturing capacity makes it impossible for the United States to ever have a trade surplus again. The current account balance will be out of deficit, and the dollar will depreciate until we erect protective trade barriers and tax the transnational corporations who want to export goods and services into our country. The world economy is going to remain unbalanced indefinitely, and that counterweight will be the United States. America cannot export its way out of this mess, so the only alternative left is to protect tariffs, or to erect protective tariffs which would be 20% interest rates, which we had in the early 1980s. If you remember, Paul Volcker was the Fed chairman in the late 70s and early 80s, and it was that 20% interest rate that shut down the overconsumption from our balance of payments problems at that time. This again could bring the needed purge of the systems. There are no guarantees, of course, that the depression that we would enter would solve the problem either. It could this time lead to world war or a revolution within the United States. Unfortunately, now, there is no way of avoiding these very painful consequences. We're too far down that road. Both tariffs and higher interest rates would bring balance and a level playing field. We also ask, when will private foreign investors stop buying these dollar-denominated assets, and how long can we expect foreign central banks to subsidize Americans and America's profligate party? It does not really matter when we meet that moment of truth. The fact is that the moment of truth is coming upon us rapidly. We believe that will happen late this year or early next year, 2005 or 2006. Once the dollar breaks 80 on the dollar index, the funding will end and all of the bubbles will break. This current rise in interest rates have been measured. But many trade speculators are not listening. There's no chance of liquidity strangulation by the Fed. It will create monetary aggregates until the edifices collapse. Alan Greenspan has told us plainly. He's told us that, and that is the way it's going to be. So don't be deceived by a flat monetary base for 5 months. That can change overnight. If you don't believe us, look at the repo pool and bank lending. All of this adds up to the same thing: monetary expansion and more inflation. If this recession depression comes, it'll be a Lollapalooza. The breaking up and out of forces that have been suppressed since 1990. This is an event that has been 15 years in the making, and its beginnings began back in the early 1930s and were exacerbated back in the early 1960s. What we're looking at today is, in reality, 45 years of financial insanity and debauchery. That's why we started on the quest that we have followed for the past 45 years. In those early years, we realized then where we were headed, and like today, nobody wanted to listen. Early in 2005, will bring a loss of faith by corporate insiders and the experts. Many are about to have their faith in the American economy, and the world economy for that matter, shaken, and shaken in a major way. They'll start to realize that what we knew long ago of what a trap that we are now in. A soft landing now is virtually impossible. Totally out of the question, in my view. So you need to get out of debt, get out of the stock market, get out of superfluous real estate and dollar-denominated bonds. Hold gold and silver coins, hold shares and bonds in euros, Swiss francs, or German bunds. Story number 6, immigration. Now, the following is the result of recent research. As a prelude, we want to say that 95% of the illegals entering the United States are decent, hardworking people. But of course, in every society, there are bad apples. And approximately 80% of the street-level drug dealers now operating in the American Southwest are illegal Mexicans, as are 24% of those in our prisons. California state authorities say that they must build one grammar school every day in order to accommodate the population of school-aged children, largely due to illegal aliens, most of whom are Mexicans. The recent guide published by the Mexican government encourages illegal immigration, and the government has discontinued subsidies for propane, diesel, tortillas, beans, electricity, housing, bread, and commodities for these poor people in Mexico. With that kind of loss of government subsidies, they have no other choice but to migrate to somewhere where they can make ends meet, and that's the United States. They have opened consulates in almost every state to encourage illegals who have sent $17 billion a year back to Mexico for the past 7 years. Mexican officials are now hiring U.S. attorneys to protect the rights of these illegals in the United States. Children are being taught by these illegals entering the United States that the American Southwest was stolen from Mexico, and that had the region not been stolen from Mexico, Mexico today would be a great world power. These facts are not very encouraging. Story number 7. Senate Bill 5113 has been introduced by Representative Paul Shin to authorize the Department of Ecology to require any persons who are caught using rain barrels and cisterns to collect rainwater off of their houses to receive a permit from the department prior to said collection of rainwater. Rainwater must be intended for beneficial use on the same property from where it was collected. What next? Think about that. Rainwater. Now, you've heard stories before. Is the government going to tax the sun? Tax the moon? Tax the rain? Did you think that you'd ever live to see the day when government would come in and say, you got to have a permit to collect the rainwater falling on your property? Well, here it comes, boys and girls, so get ready. What you need is a jar of Vaseline. Story number 8, immigration reform. Before we get to number 8 in immigration reform, let me give you a couple of reminders. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org is the webpage. or you can call the law school direct at area code 417-273-4967. Tonight's report is on the International Forecaster, published by Bob Chapman. The subscription and renewal information, it's $130 a year. And Chapman's address is Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. Again, that's Robert Chapman, the International Forecaster. $130 a year is the price of it. It's published twice a month, and that's 24 issues per year. Chapman's address is P.O. Box 510-518. That's 510-518. Punta Gorda, Florida, P-U-N-T-A-G-O-R-D-A, Florida, and the zip code is 33951. Now, the International Forecaster is at yahoo.com. Bob Chapman, International Forecaster at yahoo.com. That's correspondence. Now, the International Forecaster is sent out 24 times a year, twice a month, by surface mail, but it's sent out four times a month on email. So when you subscribe, you get an email, well, probably twice a week, at least once, sometimes twice a week. Bob Chapman, International Forecaster, he's an economist. And there's a number of these guys that I have recommended over the years. You know, obviously you can't subscribe to every newsletter in the world. And if you'll remember the Magambo the other day, his name is Richard Doty. You can get the Magambo Guru newsletter free. Magambo Guru newsletter comes from Kitco, K-I-T-C-O. That's free. Magambo cited 23 newsletters and sources in his newsletter, 23 other newsletter writers. Now, here at the Law Hour, we probably receive 10 on a regular basis. This happened to be sent in by a listener. I don't subscribe to the International Forecaster. There's a lot of them that I don't subscribe to, but when a listener sends one in, sometimes I'll review it. And I thought, well, this is a good opportunity. This is a dynamite newsletter. Chapman is unique in that he puts in a number of, in this particular issue, 63 news stories in this one issue, 63. Most newsletter writers will put in 3-4. In the Privateer, you'll see probably 6 or 8 stories, 12-page newsletter. This one's 8. 8-page newsletter. Comes out twice a month. 24 issues a year. So let's take a look at number 8, immigration reform. Colorado Representative Tom Tancredo, Republican of Colorado, has moved to lead a revolt against President Bush's immigration reform proposals, and he predicted up to 180 party members would support him. Now, Tancredo heads the House Immigration Reform Caucus. He had 71 caucus members in the last Congress. And Tancredo asks this question. He said, why is it so important to the president? Is it just the corporate business interests who benefit from this illegal cheap labor? Do they have such a strong grip on the White House so that the president actually wants to put our nation at risk? Because open borders do put our nation at risk. Is it petulance because we're able to stop him in the last Congress? Why is it so important to give amnesty to people who have broken our laws? I'm willing to lead a fight against this, and I would say that there are at least 180 members of our Republican caucus who are willing at least to stop amnesty for illegal immigrants. Now look, whether or not you agree with the solution, we have a problem here in America, and when you have 8 million undocumented workers here, investment banking house Bear Stearns says that there are 18 to 20 million illegal aliens residing in the United States today. No issue, not one other issue threatens to do more damage to the Republican coalition than this immigration issue. So said David Frum. He's a former White House speechwriter in Bush's first term. He said there's no issue where the beliefs and interests of the party, the Republican Party, the rank and file, diverge more radically from the beliefs and interests of the party's leader, he wrote in the National Review last month. So if George Bush pushes this immigration issue, we have to make sure that it politically destroys him. Now, that's pretty strong terms there. Tancredo says we're out to destroy President Bush politically if he tries to push this amnesty for illegal aliens. Last time I got a report, I heard that there were 2,000 a day coming across the border into the United States. Now, that's an invasion army. That's 14,000 a week. Think of that, 14,000 a week. I mean, that's like a division of soldiers coming across our borders every week. Now, these Mexican soldiers coming across the border are coming in here to take over the United States. They have a stated goal. Their interest, their intent is to take back what we took by the Treaty of Guadalupe in 1846. They're here to take it back. That includes Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, Colorado, and I said New Mexico and Arizona. They're here to take it back. Now, that isn't going to bode well for traditional American values now, is it? A little later on, we'll take a look at the wherefores of this. Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, 1 Samuel chapter 8 come into play. We've been giving our God the finger now for about 70 years. It started in earnest about 1933. And we weren't paying attention clear back to the turn of the century around 1900, but after 1900, it got worse. From 1900 to 1933, we weren't paying attention. From 1933 on, we've been giving the finger. And now it's payback time. Payback time. Let's take a look at story number 9. Number 9 deals with Social Security reform. President Bush's budget chief, Joshua Bolten, is leading the Fear and Crisis campaign against Social Security. He says Social Security taxes will have to rise by half if lawmakers do not revamp the current program. Bolten is a liar. The battle of words has now begun. Smoke and mirrors from ideologues, politicians, pundits, and public relations specialists. Social Security is nowhere near bankrupt yet. The excuse is the system will exhaust its surplus in 2018. They're not happy looting the tax revenue income by $250 billion a year to augment this bloated budget and the budget deficits. This budget happens to be an invasion and occupation budget. The problem really is the budget deficits. The program, if not continually looted, has enough income to cover 80% of what is currently promised. The Social Security trustees say to bring the system into actuarial balance over the next 75 years, the payroll tax would need to increase by 2% to 15% over an indefinite time frame. It would need to be increased by 4% to 16%. Again, the real problem with Social Security is the looting. The government has issued worthless, non-saleable bonds to the Social Security Administration to collateralize the money that they've taken. There is no full faith and credit left in our government. How can this be when we are $82 trillion in debt? And it's now impossible for our government to honor its debt because the government is broke. The entire nation is broke. And on top of all of this, remember, Social Security is not guaranteed. And the government does not have to pay you anything. Only we would not want to be the ones that told America your benefits are not going to be honored. Remember, George Bush wants partial privatization so that Wall Street and insurance companies can rake in $1 trillion in profits. Now, it has nothing to do with Social Security and everything to do with grand theft. I got to stop here and make a couple of observations here on Chapman's take. And he says, we got $82 trillion worth of debt. Last time I heard it was $49 trillion. 49. So 82 is a pretty high number for government obligations. I hadn't heard or seen that number before. I have seen the number $149 trillion for all public and private debt. Chapman here is referring to $82 trillion in public debt. I'm not quite sure how he figured that. He must be counting the Social Security debt off into the future, maybe 75 years. Last week I did a series of stories here on Social Security. I've been doing the numbers here in the school. I've reserved my comments against Bush's privatization somewhat because a fool answers before he's heard the whole matter, and I haven't heard Bush's proposal. He hasn't told us yet how he intends to balance the books and make this change to privatization. I cannot for the life of me figure out how to do that. If any of you listeners out there know how to take a Ponzi scheme and make the thing actuarial and make the numbers come out so that we can save it, I'd like to hear it. Now, notice the Chapman here says that, well, it can pay 80% of its obligations. Excuse me, but, you know, I'm an old-timey businessman, and I've never seen any business that could walk into its creditors and say, well, you know, we're not bankrupt and we're not broke, because we can pay 80% of our debts. We can meet 80% of the payroll. We can pay 80% of our lumber bill. You know, we can pay 80% of our taxes. Now, you go into the IRS and say, listen, we're not broke. We can pay 80% of our taxes. Go into your power company and tell them, I can pay 80% of the power bill this month. And see what happens. Are you going to receive power next month? Is the IRS going to close your business down? In fact, how would you like to go to the bank, deposit $1,000, and if the banker told you, oh, this is wonderful, thank you so much, and when you go to withdraw this, we'll give you 80% of your money back without interest. That's what Social Security does. Now, I mentioned to you last week that everybody's in agreement, and that includes Bob Chapman here, the Democrats, the Republicans. I've never seen anybody say Yeah, the Social Security was solvent, actuarial, or that the numbers add up. Everybody says the thing is going broke. But what they're telling us is that it's not going broke today. And that's true, I agree. Everybody's in agreement that between now and the year 2018, Social Security isn't going broke. I think everybody's in agreement that Social Security is in fact being looted. That's been going on since Reagan in 1983. And I think everybody's in agreement that those bonds that are being held by Social Security are totally worthless. They're not marketable. Who's going to buy them? Furthermore, they have to be bought back with higher taxes. Now, take a look at these tax rates here. He's talking about 3 to 16%. Go back to last week's programs, and I did the numbers on that. And we're already at 16, and here's Chapman saying, okay, we've got to raise it 16 percentage points to keep the thing solvent. Well, doesn't that take the tax out to 32%? Isn't that the next doubling? And Social Security taxes have been raised 22 times in 57 years. That does not bode well. That does not tell me that it's actuarial or that it's fiscally solvent. Now, I'm just an old country boy over here. I got out of the damn thing 20 years ago or more, and I'm happy as a clam at high tide. I did the arithmetic for you last week, and I showed you where these private accounts have a lot of merit. But I think I agree with all of these critics of these private accounts. The private accounts that are being promoted here by the president, apparently, I'm going to withhold a little bit of judgment here, have to do with investing your Social Security privatization accounts in stocks and bonds. And I would imagine maybe even insurance. So we're going to be limited to stocks, bonds, and insurance for our investments. I wouldn't invest in stocks and bonds. And as you'll see here, Chapman is telling you plainly, we already saw that, get the hell out of stocks and bonds. This thing is about to collapse. Who in his right mind would want dollar-denominated investments at this juncture of time when the budget deficit's $500 billion a year and the account deficit is over $600? I mean, that's $1 trillion a year, boys and girls, and there's only $800 billion a year in the world to borrow. And I don't think that the rest of the people in the world are going to lend all of their money to America so that we can contain or continue our prodigal son profligate way of life. How do you? It sure as hell doesn't make any sense to me. So I hope they do, and I wish the president the best and so on and so forth, but I think I'm going to bet on a different horse. All right, where are we here? We're talking about immigration reform, Social Security reform. Story number 9 we just completed. Let's take a look at story number 10. This is the International Forecaster, published by Bob Chapman, $129 a year. I recommend Chapman's newsletter, just like I do the Privateer, Franklin Sanders, Money Changer, the Mogambo newsletter, Don McElvaney. I mean, there's a lot of these guys out here that'll tell you where the bear does it. And I'm telling you, it's gonna shock your pants off. If you don't subscribe to one of these newsletters, the first time you read one, which is what I'm going to do this week, I'm going to shock your pants off. For most of you, you've probably never heard stories like this. I mean, this is probably like preaching to a virgin in Hollywood. But it's time that you got your head screwed on straight and got it out of the crack of your pubic hair and pay attention to what's going on around us. The things are not nearly as good out there as you've been led to believe. And there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Now, we need that oil over in the Middle East, so I can see what's going on. This is a bold bid by the United States to steal the Middle Eastern oil and to establish America and American bases in the Middle East. If we don't, our civilization is on the brink of collapse, and it will complete that collapse. Now, our God told us in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 that that's exactly what he's going to do to us. He's going to destroy us. And it's time for us to wake up. And these boys in office today are doing everything in their power to maintain this bankrupt nation and to keep it going. We're building empire. Chapman points out a little later on here in the newsletter, well, I'll take this up next time, but he's pointing out in the next section that we're on the verge of going to war with Iran. Now, pay attention. The same modality that we used or that they used on Iraq. They start off with a propaganda blitz against Iraq and their weapons of mass destruction. Do you remember that? Come to find out there were no weapons of mass destruction, but we all believed it, didn't we? All right, here's the modality against Iran. They've got nuclear weapons, and that they're in the process of developing nuclear weapons, and they're going to use those nuclear weapons as terrorist threats against us, and we need to preempt that. That'll be the justification for going to war against Iran. Nuclear weapons. I don't know if they got them or not. I don't think it's going to bode well for the United States of America if they do. But here again, do you want to go to war against Iran to make sure that they don't have them? Again, you see, we're not going to war against North Korea, who just announced the other day that they do, in fact, have nuclear weapons. We didn't go to war against North Korea a year ago, 2 years ago, or 4 years ago before they had nuclear weapons. So I don't believe for a minute that President Bush is concerned about the proliferation of nuclear weapons. I think what he is concerned about is who's going to control Iraqi oil, Saudi Arabian oil, and Iranian oil. Those are the three biggest oil pools in the world. Iraq has 25% of the world's oil. Iran has 14% of the world's oil. And Saudi Arabia, 35%. Now, you just add that up. 35, 25, that's 60, 74% of the world's oil. Oil reserves are in those three countries, and the United States is aiming at controlling it all. 74%. Then the rest of it is out in Venezuela. America has control of that. And then there's some little odd patches, you know, around Saudi Arabia, like Abu Dhabi and Yemen and, you know, a few little places like that. And then down in Africa, we've got some oil concessions down there, Nigeria and so on. Now think of that. What we're really facing here is peak oil. We're getting close to the second coming is where we're headed. Isn't it? And, you know, you take a look at Revelation 13, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, you put all those together, and then you take a look at international geopolitics today. Compare that with what's been going on over the last 4 or 5 years. America's now in 5 years been converted into a total police state. We have more people locked up in prison today in the United States of America than China, and that is an official police state. Isn't that just special? We have more Americans locked up in our jails and prisons today in the United States than we have farmers tilling the soil. Now, what does that tell you? Well, it tells me quite a little story. Well, I'm going to stop right here, and I'm on number 10, so I'm going to start here with number 10 when we come back. We'll take this up again tomorrow, and we'll take a look here at not only the police state, but we'll take a look at torture in the police state. Now, I'll bet you that a lot of you older Americans never saw the time or never believed that you would see the time when America's public policy would be that of torture, torturing prison, torturing prisoners in custody. It's official policy now. And our new attorney general is one of the architects of it. The Democrats were in opposition to this nomination of Gonzalez, but, you know, it was going through whether they liked it or not. Harry Reid was on the other day on the Lair News Hour last night, and he said now he was in high hopes that Gonzalez would shape up. I don't know if he will or not. All right, let's stop right here. We're talking about the Chapman newsletter. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. Remember, we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School in Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. There's the signal. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.